Bob, you've had a remarkable career and gained acclaim in a number of areas. How did your fascination with electronics start?
It all started with ham radio when I was 15 years old. One of my school chums was getting an amateur radio license, so I would go to his home and I would study the code and all that. Interestingly enough, though, his father was the organist at the church in the little town of Marissa, and I had been playing accordion at the time, and I'd study a little bit on the code in the back room with George, but then I'd spend the rest of the time up front with his dad, who just had a brand new C2 Hammond organ. So both of my careers started about the same time. Ham radio was really at the center of it, because I learned so much about how to build things. Technical things were so at front. In those days for ham radio, you built a lot of your own equipment. And I was lucky that I got into it when it was the thing to do, because it was my college education. I've said it many times.
The Fox Theater in St. Louis has played quite a bit of a part in your life, hasn't it?
Yeah, the Fox is really quite a concert venue today. Back in those days, I would play four times a day for the movies. In between the movies, their intermissions would be the Wurlitzer pipe organ rising up out of the floor, and we'd play for 10 minutes, and it would go back down, and away we go with the second movie. And that's what I did when I was a teenager, and started playing professionally then, and played in some restaurants. When I was 14, I started playing in a restaurant. And then in 1959, I started playing at the Holiday Inn. I was there for 6 years, six nights a week. And then I would do a lot of concerts, and I still do that. I love playing concerts on these big Wurlitzers. And I had a pipe organ in the restaurant that I played in, that I built. I built that. The ham radio was giving me the knowledge of the electronics to make that happen.
How did you get into the world of rock music?
I started a hand organ store of teaching organs and selling them. And the next thing you knew, guys would come in with their amplifiers. I never will forget this. One little guy came in and he had a Fender, and I didn't know what that was. I didn't pay much attention to contemporary music. I was listening to George Wright, Jesse Crawford, all the great organists. And I said, "What is this?" And he said, "It's a Fender." I said, "What's that for?" He said, "Well, I play my guitar." I said, "Well, the only Fender I know is on my car." So I said, "What's wrong?" And he says, "I don't know. It's broke. Somebody said this is a music shop." Well, the ham radio in me, I turned it upside down, and guess what? It had a pair of 6L6s and a 5U4. Well, one of my transmitters, the Harvey Wells, my first transmitter, had a pair of 6L6s, 5U4 modulators. So I went back and got some tubes, came back up, took it apart, looked it in there, and of course the screen resistor was blown. I'm going, aha, he tried to make this go to 12, and it only went to 10. Put a new rectifier in. About 15 minutes later, his Fender was running. He thought I was some kind of outer space genius. You didn't even need one of them schematic things. No, I don't need schematics on this. And the word spread, and from there it was crazy. People would come flocking to our store 50 miles out of St. Louis, and people like REO Speedwagon, they weren't even known by that yet. Michael McDonald, these are all guys that later on went, as you well know, to have great careers, but I would help them with their amplifiers. And so then I started renting Hammond organs, and this really is the answer to your question. I would rent Hammond organs because the traditional Hammond organ store would never rent a Hammond organ to some guy with hair down past his ears. Well, I had hair down my back, too. I started renting them. And we're talking about stages with Janis Joplin and the Byrds and whoever would come through St. Louis. Then the country artist, Dolly Parton. When they'd have these concerts, they'd need Hammond organs, and I'd rent them. Well, I'd go there to this 20,000-seat arena here in St. Louis, the Kiel Opera House, or Kiel Concert House. the sound was terrible. I had little bitty column speakers to fill 20,000 seats. I'm going, wait a minute. So the ham radio in me kicked in, and I started making big speaker, building big speakers. I went by the Fox one day after I just started doing this just to see what was going on. I hadn't played there in a few years. And there out in the back was the old stage manager and a couple of great big speakers. They actually were Altec A4s. These are speakers that are about 10 feet wide and about 6-8 feet high, big stuff. I said, what are you doing here? And he says, oh, we're putting in new speakers. We're throwing these away. I said, you're throwing these away? Can I have them? He said, sure. So I went, borrowed a truck, and we brought them back to Marissa. I built this incredible PA. I didn't know that this wasn't happening. I didn't know what was going on. I just knew in St. Louis, they weren't having good sound. So I used Macintosh amplifiers, stuff that I knew was good, high quality, and started doing these concerts, and the word spread big time.
I think that your first gig with a big star band came about almost by accident.
Here we go with the Fox, if you're keeping account, the third time. The Grateful Dead came to the Fox Theater without a sound system. And for all of the Grateful Dead fans that know their history well, that's when Owsley, their sound man, was busted the night before in New Orleans. The band didn't know it. Of course, they didn't have cell phones. They didn't have any communications. After the concert that night, the band came on to St. Louis. Owsley was loading up his truck, and when he got it all loaded, the feds pulled up around the side and confiscated him and the truck. He was on probation. He shouldn't have been out of the California state. So the Dead get into the Fox 4 o'clock that next afternoon, no PA. Where's Owsley? And then they found out he was back in jail. So the guy that gave me those speakers, he called me and he said, hey, you still have those big speakers? I said, yeah. He says, here, talk to this guy. And he handed the phone to Jerry Garcia. The rest is written history. I brought that sound system up that night. They went nuts because they had never played through anything that big, that nice. And we went on the road right out of the theater that night with them. It was a short little tour, but we hit the front page of Billboard, the Ye Old Music Shop in Marissa, Illinois, got the Grateful Dead tour contract. And then it all broke loose. All the bands were calling. I mean, everybody. And the next one that really was in line was The Who. And they were over here. They had done two shows. They were miserable. They had little bitty columns. They bought Watkins, WEM. I'm sure you recognize that name. The Watkins Electric Music WEM columns. Little bitty things with, I think, 6-inch speakers in them. They were going to do 20,000 seats with 6 of those aside. I don't think so. Well, of course they didn't. And the media just ripped them a new one because they had new music. They came over here, hadn't been here in a long time, after Tommy. And they had all this new music of Who's Next. And they were failing. Those first two concerts were awful. So their management had heard about this PA, called me, said, you've got to be in Boston tomorrow. I said, my guys are in, they're in Chicago. They can't be there. They said, well, get it here. I said, well, we can't drive. It's too long. We can't be there tomorrow. Well, rent a plane. So we did. First time in my life that I'd ever rented a 707. It started a whole nother career for us. It started a whole revolution in the sound industry. And we went out with The Who for, well, we were with them, what, 6-7 years. It was a wonderful thing. There are so many stories. We could be here for hours talking about that particular thing. I will mention one other thing. We had done 2 years of Who's Next. I'd been in and out of England. I loved everything we were doing. And here's a guy that's never tasted beer or smoked a cigarette in my whole life, and I'm running around with all these guys. Townsend always put it cool, though. He says, look, leave the guy alone. He's got a soldering iron. He makes us sound good. And, oh, yeah, he can drive the truck. We had great times with them. I relished the time standing beside and behind Keith Moon. That's where I always stood in the concerts and watching this incredible human being that destroyed himself. He was absolutely, without a doubt, no question, no argument, the best drummer I have ever in my life seen or heard.
Bob Heil has been talking about his life and times. He believes that without ham radio, he wouldn't have been in a position to be the man who made the rock bands loud. In part two, we discover how Bob was influential in making some of the classic rock songs.